News today, again, out of Louisville, the athletic director and Rick Pitino on administrative leave without pay, and the attorney for Rick Pitino saying that his client did nothing wrong and they fully expect the $44 million and blah, 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 and this thing's going to get ugly.
Quickly.
Yes.
Yes. It's going to get ugly. It's going to get out of hand. I think that this is a tip of the iceberg, Napes.
All right. It is time now for the Landry Report as we talk with Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com each and every week. Chris, good to have you on. How are you today?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing good. When you look at the tape of what we saw Sunday night in Washington, I was telling we had Lincoln Kennedy on earlier. I got to tell you, Chris, you watch tons of football. I try to watch tons of football. I don't recall seeing a game that lopsided with a team that was supposed to be as good as the Raiders. Give me your thoughts on what we saw.
Well, you know, it's early. I think we can overreact to one game. There's no doubt that the Redskins put together a great performance. You know, it was in prime time. Defensively, they got after it. You know, we'll see over the course of the season how it'll play out. My sense is that the Raiders will have a better season than the Redskins. But on a week-to-week basis, I thought this past weekend there were a lot of teams that just were, you know, up was down, down was up, and left was right, and right was left. I mean, it was a lot of things all over the place. So, listen, it's a long season, but it wasn't a good performance for the Raiders, that's for sure.
Well, Chris, I'm glad you talked about not overreacting. So please talk me off the ledge with the Seahawks because I don't want to overreact at 1-2 right now, my friend. What's happening?
Well, this offensive line is bad, and it's not playing well at all. And I know they constantly put a lot on Tom Gable to fix it, but I think it's a big issue that if they don't correct it, it's going to be a problem that will linger. They're not able to run the football. They're not able to protect well enough, and it's putting their defense on the field way too much. And I think it's a very good defense, but they're not playing well because they're on the field way too much. So, you know, it takes about 4 to 5 weeks to really get a feel for, you know, how these teams are. But there's some teams that clearly have some issues to work through, and Seattle's offensive line is definitely one of them.
You know, we always talk about matchups in the NFL when certain teams meet up. So we saw Denver lose at Buffalo. Now they come home. Huge game, AFC West. Give me your thoughts on the matchups with the Broncos and the Raiders.
Well, you know, Denver did not do a very good job this past week against Buffalo. They really did a poor job in coverage. They got pressure on Tyrod Taylor and sacked him 4 times. But they gave up some big plays in the passing game, which – was really off of, you know, play extensions by Taylor. And I thought their young safeties really did a poor job. You know, this is still a pretty good Denver defense. They can match up pretty well. They're a better team at home, no doubt about it. And what I think is interesting in that if you look at this league, and even in the early part of the season in most years, teams that beware the team that comes off of a bad performance. These guys are professionals. They get paid. Their jobs are on the line, and they usually respond in a positive way. Well, you had a pretty bad performance by the Broncos and the Raiders this past week, so it'll be interesting to see. I expect a well-played game, both teams to play well. Denver plays well at home. Oakland's a little bit more explosive. I think it really comes down to Denver's ability to be able to run the football. That'll determine whether they can win this game or not.
Chris, in the NFC North, you got 3 teams at 2-1. Obviously, the Bears at 1-2. Out of those three, the Vikings, Lions, and Packers that are 2-1, who impresses you the most?
To this point, Detroit impresses me the most of the three. It's early. Minnesota has been, you know, without Sam Bradford, Case Keenum played well last week. They're very good defensively. Green Bay has not played all that well early in the season. You know, defensively, they're not that good. Offensively, we know that they're very, very capable with Aaron Rodgers. At the end of the season, through the course of the season, still like Green Bay's chances to put it together a little bit. But through 3 weeks, Detroit has played better than anybody in the division on a consistent level. You know, Atlanta made some mistakes to help them out, but they very easily could have won that game last week against Atlanta.
Yeah, and that sets up the game tomorrow with Thursday Night Football. And you talk about the injuries with Green Bay. You're talking about, you know, the Bears don't look like they're very good. And, I wonder what you expect in this game tomorrow. We know about the rivalry and everything. I mean, Green Bay should win, but gosh, we saw what Cincinnati did to them last week and really probably should have won the game.
Yeah, they played well for a half and then, you know, and just kind of fell apart. Chicago's played pretty good ball. They didn't play well in that middle game against Tampa, but week one against Atlanta, this past week against Pittsburgh, John Fox has got this team playing hard. They can run the football fairly well, and defensively their front's playing well. Green Bay better watch it. I mean, Chicago's capable of making this a game. Still like Green Bay at home with Aaron Rodgers. They find a way to win these type of games, even when they get outplayed. But I think this game might be a little closer than any of us anticipated when the season we looked at this game on the opening season schedule.
You know, Chris, something you can help me out with, and I talked to Grant about this, and I would like your take. A lot of the times we see Aaron Rodgers, the guys are running off the field, he snaps the ball, he's getting a free look down the field. We've seen him score on it many times. Can you explain to me why guys just don't run through the line and tag him? Because if they hit the quarterback, is that not going to stop the play? Would a 15 or a 5-yard penalty be better than allowing a team to score a touchdown? Or am I incorrect?
You mean in a case where he's in a hurry up?
Yes.
What situation?
Like someone's running off the field and he sees that they have too many men on the field. He hikes the ball quickly and he gets a free shot down the field. As opposed, if someone runs through the line and just tags the quarterback, isn't there going to be a penalty and doesn't that get squashed?
There'll be a penalty, but obviously you're dealing with the maybe getting a cheap first down. So I don't know that I would recommend doing that in terms of getting that penalty, particularly when you're dealing with a hit on the quarterback that's automatic first down 15 yards. That wouldn't necessarily be the way to go. And it's one of the reasons why you've got to be really careful against them. And I think you've got to be able to, be in your nickel in those situations so that you can call and limit your substitution so you can be ready to go so he can't snap quickly on you. It's awfully tough to get it, too. If you've got more guys on the field and he snaps it, you're right, it's a penalty there. But if you're able to before the snap just come through the line, then it'll be flagged right there, and you'll get the penalty anyway. It'll be a different penalty.
Okay.
But certainly you wouldn't want to make contact with them, because then you get a more egregious penalty that's 15 yards and an automatic first down. You don't want to give that. So he gets you in a tough spot. There's
yeah,
no
he
doubt.
Does.
We're talking with Chris Landry. It's the Landry Report right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Go to LandryFootball.com and check everything out. Let's talk some college football for a couple of moments. And we kind of talked a little bit about Oklahoma State and the big game they had at home. And now all of a sudden they get knocked all the way back into, 15th in the rankings. They lose. They're now 3-1. Anything surprising you? And I'm just picking out that game because it was a home loss for them. Anything through the first month of college football that really has surprised you?
I never really bought Oklahoma State's defense, but it was their offense and the great game plan by Gary Patterson and TCU that really outplayed them. That was impressive. Nothing that's overly surprising. I think that Ohio State's trouble on offense has been a little bit surprising. Auburn's problems on offense has been surprising. On the positive end, Georgia's looked really impressive. It's Alabama and everybody's kind of chasing them. I think Clemson's best game is comparable to Alabama, but they're a little bit more inconsistent up and down. Oklahoma's played well in stretches, but last week they gave up a lot of points to a bad Baylor team. And I think some teams tend to play up and down to their competition, and USC certainly fits that bill.
And again, you talk about Clemson. And yeah, they beat a 13th ranked Auburn, and they clobbered Louisville. I was looking at their schedule the other day, and once you get past this week at Virginia Tech, which that's a good team ranked 12th, there's no one on their schedule that I look at and go, oh boy, that scares me. Now I know it's college football, and I get that, but if they can get through this week, they should be in pretty good shape, don't you think?
They should, and they will be. The only issue is, again, I would say the same thing about Alabama, and I feel much safer about saying that Alabama is not going to be touched, because Alabama plays to a different standard. They're much better coached. They don't have really letdowns, whereas Clemson's a little more up and down. They were better than Pittsburgh last year, got beat by Pittsburgh. They were better than NC State, and if it's not for NC State really messing up at the end of the game, they probably lose that game and never make it to the playoffs. So I think Clemson, while the schedule is favorable and they should win every game, including a banged-up Florida State team, they're a team that's more likely to stub their toe. For example, last week they really struggled with Boston College through 3.5 quarters. The game was a 7-7 game. They really ended up it being a 14-7 game, and then BC made a couple of mistakes at the end. It ends up being 34-7 and a very misleading score. So, again, I say that, and I think Clemson was looking ahead this week to Virginia Tech and what could be a tough matchup for them. But I think Clemson's best game probably beats Virginia Tech and maybe beats them by double digits. But if they make mistakes, they have struggles in the passing game like they did last week, then all of a sudden that game is a lot closer than people might anticipate.
Chris, I know it's still early, but I have to hit you with a Heisman watch. Saquon Barkley, over 300 yards of total offense for Penn State. What kind of back is this young man?
The best back I've seen in a long time.
Wow. That's saying a lot.
Yeah,
better than Zeke Elliott.
Wow.
He's got unbelievable ability to cut. His jump cuts are unbelievable. He's great out of the backfield. He's 230 pounds. He runs with power. I think he's the best player in college football. Mm. Hopefully he can stay healthy at the next level. If he gets behind a good offensive line, he could have the same type of impact that Zeke Elliott's had. Just a great back. I'd make him the favorite at this point, at least for the Heisman. I think Baker Mayfield still living large off the Ohio State game, but we all know how this works in November. Who plays well will ultimately determine that trophy. But Barkley is, to answer your question, is phenomenal. He's a great, great back.
Again, the Landry Report each and every week with Chris Landry. Let's highlight some of the things on your website.
Well, we break down what we do this time of year. We break down games inside the film room, break down teams. So we're finished recapping this past week of all the teams, and we're now getting ahead as midweek is here on us. We're going to look ahead towards this week's game. So we'll break down all the NFL, all the college games, take you inside the film room, break down the personnel matchups, the strategical matchups, what's going on with the teams and their depth charts, and kind of give some of the keys to the game and how we think they might play out. So we've got a lot of free information on there as well, but we've got our podcasts every Tuesday and Thursday. So great opportunity to check it out. We think you'll love it. It will give you an enhanced enjoyment and understanding of the college and pro game throughout the season. And we've got discounts going on, as well as we're taking 50% of all membership money and putting it towards buying supplies to help those that were victims of the floods in Texas.
That's a great job. Because of where you live and your background, and we're talking with Chris Landry, the Landry Report, Baton Rouge, LSU, you and I have talked about this now for a few years, and that's Odell Beckham. Are you surprised, knowing him and family and everything else, that he has turned into such a diva? And again, we see, me on Sunday, doesn't really take ownership over it. John Mara has to come out and say, well, we're going to handle this internally, and they addressed it today. And, Coach McAdoo said you won't see it. It just, to me, seems to be turning into a mess.
It is. I am surprised. Of course, I thought back and looked that there are a number of guys that tend to change. I remember when Terrell Owens came out of UT Chattanooga, he was a very quiet guy, kid. Kind of, you had to really pull things out of him, and that's certainly not how he turned out. So I guess when you start to have success, some guys handle success the right way, and some guys let it go to their head. And I think that's what's happened with Odell. I think he's gotten very full of himself. I think he's a talented young man. But I think a lot of the success in the spotlight in this modern-day age where you become an instant superstar in a big media market that he's in, I think it has created a little bit of a monster to where I think he feels that he's a little bit bigger than the game. He's bigger than the team. He's bigger than everyone, and he can do what he wants and gets away with it. I never quite understand some of the antics these guys try to do. It is definitely, look at me, look what I'm going to do. It's all about me. It's some of the stuff is downright juvenile, like what he did last week. I won't even.
No, it's awful.
Haven't seen. I won't even describe. It's just stupid. It's
all right,
childish,
so you've been.
So, but no, I think that they've allowed some things to get out of hand there in New York. I think there's a lack of discipline, and I think we're seeing it. And having the owner have to come out and deal with that. That's a real a black mark on what Ben McAdoo and his inability to control it. And, you know, I think enough is enough with him.
Yep.
I think he's just gotten out of hand.
See, my opinion is, you can go with any sport. My opinion is you can't win with a player like that and the distractions that he brings and the me. I don't think you can win. And again, I'm not saying that it's Odell Beckham's fault that here he is in his fourth year and the Giants have only played in one playoff game. But when he did have his playoff game, he was awful. That was 6 days after he was, you know, down in South Beach and mm-hmm. showing pictures on Instagram and social media. And, you know, that's fine and dandy if that's what you want to do on your off day. But you damn well better come out and play on Sunday, and he didn't. And so I go back to, and, you know, this is, you know, maybe I'm speaking emotionally because I'm a Giants fan, but I said this to Doug. I'd rather lose without Odell Beckham than lose with Odell Beckham.
Well, I think that, you know, what you're getting to is the guy's not a leader, and yet by the nature of the way he's presented as like a team leader. And he's a guy that that means so much to the team, and yet he doesn't produce in that regard. I don't think he's good for that locker room. I don't think he's good for the team, quite frankly, and I don't think he produces in a lot of big moments yet. There are times he does make some big-time plays. There's no denying his talent and his ability to catch the football and make big plays, but again, he's not reliable. Guys like that are never reliable at the biggest moments because it is all about them, and it's, you know, it is definitely concerning, and it is an issue that I think it's gotten too far out of hand to where it's controllable, and I don't. You know, there are differences in maybe some of the things that they've done, but it's some of the annoying type of things that we saw with Terrell Owens and maybe somewhat of a different way. Those type of guys, I think that, you know, I was taught a long time ago, you win with character, not characters. And I think he's a perfect example of, you know, why the Giants are certainly to this point the most underachieving team in the NFL because their defense is not playing well. They're just not a very good football team, even though I think there's a lot of talent there.
You know, Chris, you mentioned something about Terrell being a quiet guy and maybe the same with Odell Beckham. In all your scouting and the things that you do and how on the Landry Report and on LandryFootball.com, you go over players and you know all the players. Do you ever run into general managers and different things that try to inquire about the little things that you may have seen when you're going through your scouting?
Oh, I mean, in my consulting work with team, we talk a lot about that. Now, they spend an inordinate amount of time getting to know these players, and that's why we spend all that time at the combine and the All-Star game and spend a lot of time with their college coaches, and you even research them back into high school. And you really do a lot of painstaking, detailed work on these guys' character and personality traits. It's also why we give a lot of these personality tests given by some of these psychological experts that every team employs now. So there's an awful lot that's done. I think the thing that will surprise you is some guys tend to change a little bit.
Yeah.
Success changes some guys.
Yeah.
And I've always believed money makes you more of what you are, and I still believe that to some degree. But, you know, I think when you get success, you sometimes become a little bit full of yourself.
Right.
And I think you tend to not do and focus on the things that have made you successful. And you tend to, I don't know, maybe partake in some of the luxuries that come with being successful. So I think that is one of the things I've learned about the personality of players. And we've seen that a lot with receivers, but you don't see that out of Antonio Brown. You don't see it out of Julio Jones. You see a number of great receivers that are just great on the field, that work hard and are constantly trying to get better. And I'm not saying that Odell doesn't work at his game, but he doesn't work at it as hard as those others. And he certainly doesn't have a team-first attitude.
Nope.
And I think that leads to, I think, some of the problems that they have in New York.
Yeah, not everybody can be Larry Fitzgerald, can they?
No, they cannot.
No, he's the best that we've probably, you know, seen in terms of a leader and doing that. But, and you know what? When you think about it, there are more of those guys that are on that good side than the Odells. And unfortunately, we're compelled and we should to talk about the guys like Odell. And I think it's unfortunate because that's the story there. And it's again, not his play, but maybe his lack of leadership and preparation that's led to some of the problems with the Giants.
Final question on the Landry report. I want you to talk to me about the development and what you see week to week with Jared Goff.
Oh, I think he's gotten better. I think better coaching, better players around him. I mean, you've got playmakers. You've got a couple of weapons that he can throw the football to. It's opened up things for the offense. It's a second year in the league. So, you know, that first year where you're trying to learn how to study, think about when you go to college, if you come from a, you know, from high school and you got by, but you really didn't know how to take notes and didn't know how to study. All those things I think he learned over this past year, but quite frankly, let's call it what it is. He's getting better coaching now, and he's got a better weapons around him, and it's made him a more productive player. You know, he's still going through a learning curve, but he's significantly better than he was last year at this time, and I'm very curious to see what they do this week going on the road to Dallas.
Yep, going to be interesting to say the least. Chris, great stuff. The Landry Report each and every week right here on Sports 1140. Have a good week, Chris. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, you guys do the same. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Love talking to him, Doug, because you know I love his website, too. I mean, everything you could possibly need is on there.
Yeah, it's not just the fact that he comes on the show that we're talking about the website, because you heard the in-depth analysis and understanding of team-to-team, player-to-player, and all the little things that you need to know. It's always intriguing for me to talk to Chris.
All right. We are with you right up till 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, we do have that Thursday night football game with Chicago and Green Bay. We'll come right back. And we'll continue this show on Sports 1140 KHTK.
It is 5:32. Time to watch the Sacramento Republic FC host the Real Monarchs SLC tonight at 7:30 at Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at SacRepublicFC.com. Jay, that was totally unnecessary to say my Mariners. That should have been a sweep, Grant.
Should have been, could have been.
You know. Look at you.
Is that game tonight, did you say?
Yes,
Chris, you going to the game tonight?
I'll be there.
All right.
What the question is, will you have your scarf with you?
I don't have my scarf with me.
Oh, goodness gracious, Grant.
What
is going on, man? What's up?
It's not cold enough to have a scarf.
Well, I didn't think that the cold weather dictated. I thought it was just fandom. That's what I thought.
I'm fine.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
Enjoy yourself there, Chris.
I don't know.
Tower Bridge Battalion in full effect tonight?
I'll be there.
Okay.
No, they're always in full effect. What kind of question is that?
Well, I didn't know if he was, you know, just kind of hanging out or what he was doing, but I see Chris is repping out. Republic in the house. Going to get W tonight? You calling it? Call your shot. Call your shot.
Yeah, they'll win. They'll win.
1-0?
1-0.
That's all you got to score is one if you don't, if you, you know, right?
You love hearing that, Grant. You're something else. All right. We shall see.
All right. If you want to call the show, very easy to do so. 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. I am Grant Napier along with Doug Christie, and we're going to get you right up till 7 o'clock. Next weekend, or I should say next week, we got an action-packed week because we're going to be talking a lot of playoff baseball. We got a Kings game on Monday night as they start the preseason. And hopefully no more bad news coming out of sports because it's been that way over the weekend. And the news today on the heels of yesterday's FBI press conference with the arrest and today's deal with Louisville, unbelievable. Let's get to Randall. Hello, Randall.
Hey, Grant. How you doing?
Good, Randall. What's up?
Not much. Hey, I've been listening a lot, and I'm enjoying the show, but I haven't really heard anybody really get into too much of the college scandal as far as elaborating on why is it criminal and not just, like, college violations. I know there's all kinds of unethical and immoral stuff going on and, you know, the deals with the shoe company and stuff like that, but what makes it criminal for them to do what they're doing instead of just violating college rules and, you know, colleges banning those guys and stuff like that? What aspect is making it criminal? That's mainly my question.
Well, first of all, I am not an attorney, all right? So that's first and foremost, all right? I can't answer from legal ramifications. I can only talk about you know, what the charges are. And again, you know, we're talking about, it wasn't just like one or two things, right, Doug? I mean, it was.
Yeah, there's a litany, Randall. And it also, you know, like Grant said, the lawyer part, and, you know, I would say this, Grant, Country DD, he is a lawyer, but we won't get into that right now. Well, I will say this. $100,000, when you start talking about those types of money, I think that, and the point, Randall, FBI is involved. So I think that in and of itself, this is something that supersedes the NCAA. I don't even know that they knew anything until all this stuff dropped on them.
I mean, it's a fair question. I understand what you're trying to get at. Mm-hmm. What the FBI alleges is a crime, and we've heard that, you know, we're talking about, in some cases, 80 years in prison.
Yes, and that right there is what got my attention when they said the 80 years in prison. And the only thing that I could really think of was maybe because, you know, if they give, the kid's parents, you know, $90,000 and that money's not being reported to the IRS, then I can see it becoming a problem. So that's the only thing that I was really kind of wondering about, if that's more...
And I would also say this. It was a 3-year investigation. And again, we're talking about bribes. We're talking about corruption. And we're talking about they used, again, from what we understand, wiretaps, surveillance video, undercover agents, cooperating witnesses. We're talking about, violations with the Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, we're talking about wire fraud. We're talking about siphoning off millions of dollars from accounts of professional athletes for investment Ponzi-like schemes. You know, again, I'm just reading to you some of the reasons why it is criminal and not just an NCAA violation.
And Randall, yeah. I kind of felt the same way as you yesterday. When Grant starts saying siphoning money and all those things, Ponzi schemes, obviously that leans on the criminal side. But my point was kind of like yours, is this is something that has been going on, I thought, for many years, and it's just kind of what was in the fabric of college athletics, paying players and different stuff like that underneath the table. Why now criminal? An investigation.
And then just the last thing I wanted to say, Doug, is I really haven't had a chance to say this yet, but I really enjoy your addition to the show. And
thank you, sir.
I love the show, and I think it just even turns it up a notch. So
thank you, man.
Appreciate you.
Guys.
Appreciate you listening. Have a great evening. Thank you. Mike is next. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. How you doing? It's New York Mike here calling out of Berkeley.
What's up, New York
things.
Mike from Berkeley?
Kind of bummed out about, really bummed out about the Rick Pitino Louisville news. You know, for those of us that kind of grew up in the Big East with the, you know, the NCAA as kids, you know, Rick Pitino, he's written books. He's always been one of the top tier leaders in the NCAA basketball world. And this is really, it's kind of heartbreaking. It's almost sickening, really. And I've been listening to your show the last 3 hours because I'm in really heavy traffic. So I concur with, you know, regardless of how this shakes out, he looks real bad and he'll go down probably. People will remember him with this investigation, regardless of the verdict, right? I mean, they're going to remember this. He's 66 years old, right?
Oh, no question.
And you know what, Mike, I would go to say, I don't know this for sure, but I would go to say that wins and different things will probably be erased from his record, I would think. I don't know that for sure, but we've seen it happen with other coaches and other institutions. So that is something that could probably go down. So when you look in the record books, you might not see Rick Pitino.
Only if they can prove that there were improprieties and violations of the NCAA previous to this year. The recruit that we're talking about hadn't even stepped onto the Louisville campus yet.
Not yet.
So you wouldn't be able to take away wins unless they can prove.
But you said 3 years.
The investigation started 3 years ago.
Okay.
But it wasn't all centered on Louisville.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And you mentioned about 2 hours ago in your show that, I think it was you, Doug, that they're not going to go after minor. The feds, when they decide to go after a case.
That's right, Mike.
They have a large dollar amount associated with it because that's how they get promoted within the agency.
Yes.
So this is a young story that's only going to get better. Let's flip to something even more positive. I mean, yep. Like I'm heading to Sacramento tonight. The Kings, it's been long overdue since, you know, Doug Christie was rocking the court.
Amen.
That's a fantastic business move. Whoever made the decision to extend that to 2019 knows what they're doing. Anyone that's run a company, an organization, realizes you can't make 90-day stock decisions. You have to make long-term decisions and measure quarterly, like they're going to do, like whether it's, you know, the annual wins over a three-year period or just quarterly progress. Really happy with that news. Someone, you know, committed some dollars and said, we're going to stick with the group that we have. Let's make this happen. So that's great news.
I'm glad that you feel that way, Mike, because I think a lot of Sacramento Kings fans do. I know I'm speaking for Grant here, but I know we feel that way. I thought that this was a really good move and a good look for the Kings, sending out a message about, you know, solidarity and building a foundation here to go forward with the team in the future.
Excellent. Love you guys, by the way.
All right.
Great,
hey,
great to see you on the show. Thank you.
We really appreciate your phone call. All right, so we've got other phone calls that we're going to get to, and we'll do that when we return right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.
It is 5:48. Time to watch Sacramento FC host Real Monarchs SLC tonight at 7:30, Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at SacRepublicFC.com.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. Again, the numbers, I should say, are 339-1140, that's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We are talking about the scandal in college basketball. We're talking about both Vlade Divac and Dave Yeager getting a contract extension so that their deals run in sync. Three more years left on their deals. And speaking of the Kings, I had a chance to watch them this morning. And, you know, Dave Yeager told us this when he was on, and he said this to others. They're going to really try to get out and run. They feel they have the athletes this year to run a lot more, and I think that makes for fun basketball.
Not only fun, Grant, but I think wise, because you got to use what it is that you have. You have youth. You do have some experience, so you can spot do it. Obviously, if you got Z-Bo and you're posting him up and different things. But even George Hill, with the ability to get out and push the ball and get out in the open court, Willie Cauley-Stein, Scow, you got De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield. You got guys that can get out and run. I think you got to take full advantage of that. Glad to hear and see that that is what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, as you just said, you ran down some of the personnel and, you know, there's a really nice mix of, you know, the young and the guys that aren't so young. And, you know, when you have a Garrett Temple to go along with what we saw last year and with, you know, Costa Koufos, and, you know, you bring in a Zach Randolph, you bring up a Vince Carter, you bring in a George Hill, you know, now you can put five guys out on the floor to show the rookies how to run plays, how to do things.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, Grant, it allows the Kings to – now, obviously, the young guys have to produce because the young guys are the youth that has the ability to get out and run. But when you got veterans, they can slow the ball down. They can play at a different pace. And that ability for the Kings to kind of chameleon and be able to play a couple different ways, I think speaks volumes to the ability maybe to stay in some games and sneak some out and win some games. Obviously, they're going to have to knock down shots, but I love them get out in open floor. I love the ability, like you just said, to have five veterans that can show these guys how to do it.
I think that's important.
It absolutely is, because not only are you going to hear Coach Yeager speaking to you as a young player, now you're going to hear veterans and see veterans demonstrate for you. So you're going to cover all the bases that go into learning something physical and a physical activity.
Yeah, the Kings are back on the practice floor as we speak right now. And, you know, again, this is camp. A lot of times you'll go twice a day. Now, there are limits on certain things in terms of, you know, full-fledged, you know, basketball.
Come on, Grant.
Hey, you know it and I know it. You went through it.
Limits?
There are limits.
Yeah. Goodness gracious, man. What does that mean? Give me
Well, you tell me
limit.
You played in the league and you went through many training camps.
Yeah,
now it's different.
I went with through some camps with no limits.
Well, that's what I mean. Now it's different.
It is a different time. I believe it. I'm going to have to look it up. So I'm. But I want to say that it's 90 minutes of contact a day, which.
Which is, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure. Don't touch me when you pass the ball, you set a screen. What exactly does that mean?
All right, let's get to Dave. Dave, you're on with Grant and Doug.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Kings comment and a Raiders comment. And the Kings comment is, how many years? I know they picked up the option for Jaeger. Is it only 1 year?
Yeah,
or
is it
going to be two?
They picked up his option so that he has, including this season, 3 more years remaining on his contract. Same with Vlade.
Beautiful, because I think that the first year was a do-over. I think he inherited an impossible situation.
I agree.
With Cousins. I think that George Karl had it right when he wanted to, rumor had it, he wanted to trade Cousins. So
yep.
I think Jaeger has to have at least 3 years. I think this is beautiful. It'll lock him up for that. And the other thing is, on the Raiders, I saw in the Chronicle over the weekend, Jim Plunkett having a comment about Carr not having the rifle arm and being able to get it down the field. And then you see it right there in the Washington game where he gets it picked off the first time he tries to go long. And then I thought about it, and I don't see him really stretching the field too much. I know they don't have any burners, but I think that is one of the problems of the offense, is everything's kept in front of them, and they just dismantle Josh Norman and those guys. They really locked down the Raider receivers on Sunday night.
Dave, do you recall last year, and I don't, so I'm asking you, do you recall the inability for Derek Carr to move the ball down the field? And the reason that I ask you that question is things can change when those offensive linemen are now laying in your lap because the defensive linemen are just bull rushing them, as we talked with Link earlier. Do you recall that?
Well, you know, I'm a big Carr fan, and I tell you, I have – no problems with Derek Carr. I think he's a great quarterback, mm-hmm. but I just think that they missed an opportunity to maybe get somebody that can stretch the field. But I just think I'm not going to say anything about this past game, because John Gruden used to have that, you know, theory on it. You go, he took it in 4-game increments, and he would say you have to go 3-1 in those 4-game increments. That's going to put you at 12-4. So I just think that you just have to throw that one out and move on. I think this is a big game for the Raiders this week, and we're going to find out a lot about them after this Denver game.
I agree with you. I mean, let's not kid anybody. This is a really huge game. And if they would have another poor performance, and I don't think they will, but if they had another poor performance like they had in Washington, their stock would go down in a hurry.
Well, we talked about it, Grant. I've called them before, and I think that if that defense doesn't get their act together – with Sean Smith and David Emerson, these cornerbacks are getting toasted, and there's no excuse for that. And they're going to have to either get the rookies in there, or they're going to have to upgrade that position. But that's all I had to say about it.
All right, man. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, again, you don't panic after one bad loss. Two bad losses, then you panic a little bit.
Yeah, but Grant, you had to know going into the season that the defense isn't going to be your strong suit. You're hoping that they could hold a little bit, and the offense would be prolific, maybe even more prolific than they were last year. And up to this point, they haven't seen that.
All right, let's get to John. You're on with Grant and Doug. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Of the three young shooting guards, I think it's three young shooting guards, which ones are you most comfortable playing down to small forward for defensive purposes?
Well, can you give us the names? I would assume you mean Buddy and you mean Bogdan, and who would be the other?
Garrett Temple.
Malachi.
I would feel more comfortable with Malachi.
Yeah, I would too.
Because I know Garrett can play, can defend the three. It's just the other three, I'm not sure which ones would be comfortable.
You know, interesting to your point, out of all of those guys, maybe Buddy might be the smallest, but Garrett out of the other two is the smallest. So that's where the defensive techniques Malachi and Bogdan are going to have to learn, and they can learn it from a guy like Garrett because he can go and play a small forward. Now he's undersized and doesn't have as much weight, but technique-wise, he is very fundamentally sound. So if those guys can get those defensive fundamentals locked in, meaning Malachi, meaning Buddy, meaning Bogdan, they can kind of move around and play a little bit of positionless basketball on the defensive end, John.
Great. I hope so. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. We'll come back. We have one more hour left here on Sports 1140 KHTK.